When I was chanting the Heart Sutra tonight, I was realizing again that it provides a foundation of reality. And if the more we allow this foundation to permeate our bodies and minds, our hearts, our spirits, and our understanding, and the more impossible it would become for us to contribute, even in the smallest way, to the kind of tragic events of the murder of these young people in Norway. It may be that this poor man who murdered these people is crazy. It's possible. But it's not sufficient, in my view, to say he's crazy, so he killed people. Who isn't crazy when you kill people? I mean, how is that act ever sane when you murder somebody? There may be the taking of life that makes a kind of sense in a way, but the jails are filled with people who have crossed a certain kind of line. And so we have these legal definitions, so they're crazy or they're not crazy, or they're not guilty because they're crazy, or they're guilty because they're not crazy, or, you know. But to murder somebody, to me, you know, it's not interested in a kind of legal definitions. The Heart Sutra provides a foundation for understanding the oneness of life, the oneness of all life, the emptiness of division, the emptiness of the absolute, the boundlessness of each thing, and the fact that within each thing, all other things will be found. If we have this as a foundation, then it's going to be very, very difficult for us in our sane minds, in our rational minds, to justify creating divisions that are false divisions. For example, when we act in a way that reinforces the idea of separation and difference, we make it easier for ourselves and other people to act on that delusion of separation. Whether the person is judged sane or insane, the fact is that there are causes and conditions for someone to act violently against another person. And when we reinforce the idea of separation and division and difference and duality, we're going against what, at least for me, and within Zen, is the foundation of oneness, oneness itself. In other words, we're creating a delusion. We're creating a world of delusion, so that those people for whom delusion is their ordinary world may act. And the more that we continue to reinforce that idea, the more we are part of their act. And I don't believe that any of us can say that we are not part of acts of destruction, even if we ourselves do not take that act ourselves. Some way in which we live continues a view of separation. Some way in which we live contributes to this idea that because someone has brown skin and someone has white skin, or someone has red skin, or someone has yellow skin, or someone is old, or someone is young, or someone is male, or someone is female, or someone is vulnerable, or someone is rich, or someone is poor, they are ultimately and absolutely other, and therefore we can justify acting against them. That's what all of that is about. When you have somebody who is unstable, and we create a world in which those sorts of divisions are reinforced, it is easier for that person to believe their delusion and act upon it. And so, as horrible as it is for this man to have worked for 9 years in his deluded mind against the idea of the multiple, what does he call it, the Muslimization and the multiculturalism, the horror that he envisioned for his country, the very principles that democracy are working for, the things that he found so horrible and needed to destroy. Even if he's crazy, we have to look at ourselves and ask, in what way in my life do I contribute to that delusion in a way that is just ordinary, daily, and by me, possibly unseen? And this is the important point. There are so many ways in which we contribute to that delusion, and we justify it, just like he justifies. Now, I'm not saying that we should say we are murderers, but we have to understand that we are part of the causes and conditions of delusion. We ourselves. And Buddhism looks very, very carefully at what are called the causes and conditions, or the chain of causation that leads us from here to there. And so I ask you with my whole heart, look at your life. Look at the way you act. Look at your belief system and ask yourself, where am I justifying tearing the oneness of life into two or three or four? Where am I doing it? And without blaming yourself for doing it, because it is a matter of awareness, make a commitment to try to stay awake and not do it. That simple. Try to stay awake and not do it. Try to catch yourself before you do it. We should try to catch ourselves as we're doing it. And if we do it and we succeed in doing it, we should catch ourselves afterwards and try to undo it. We should try to repair the damage that we've done, whether it's to ourselves or to someone we're close to or to someone that we don't even know. Otherwise, we are making it easy for those people who are unstable to act in the way that this person acted, or for those people who are conceptually confused about the nature of life, those who believe we should oppose our enemies in a violent and aggressive way. That maybe they're not crazy. Maybe they truly believe that you should do that as much as possible, like we're seeing down in the States now, where where they're going to play this out to the very, very end, because they believe in the rightness of a position that walking down that track in the way that they are is already causing harm, already causing damage to the weakest in that society. The examples of this kind of behavior are endless. That's the first thing I wanted to say. The second thing I wanted to offer you is not only do we have a sort of obligation to feel sad with the people who are directly affected from this, and I do think it's an obligation. We shouldn't let them suffer alone. We should be sad with them. We should be horrified with them. Should draw them close to us, take them into our hearts and weep with them. But also, we should allow that kind of tragedy to awaken in us a deep appreciation of the opposite of that destruction, a deep appreciation of the beauty of our life, of the preciousness of life, of the importance of existence, of the importance of others' lives, of how we can dedicate ourselves to the happiness of other people. We don't have to worry about our own happiness. You know, if we dedicate ourselves to other people's happiness, we will be happy. So, dedicate ourselves to the well-being of other people so that we don't just take the blow of tragedy and violence. We transform it instantly into positive action. In a moment. When we say in our vows, delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to transform them, that's what I'm talking about. Right there is that vow. There's another delusion. There's 70 or 80 plus young people killed for, you know, because of delusion. We cannot save their lives, but we can help their lives not have been in vain by acting in a way that appreciates life itself and that gives life to life as much as possible. And by doing that, we begin to get some kind of idea of how to work with our own delusions as well. As soon as we recognize them, turn it into a food, good nourishing food for life itself. Otherwise, we're just bystanders on the side of the road watching this circus go back and forth. And what good is that? How is that in any way honoring of this very difficult practice that we take on as our expression of our unified life in this particular form, the oneness of life that we, each of us, truly is. So that's sort of briefly what I wanted to say to you. Please consider it. Take my urging to really look at yourself. Try to pull back as much as you can the habit of delusion and put forward the habit of life-giving activity in your thought, your speech, your behavior. Some expression of oneness. And you'll see things can get better very, very quickly in your life and in the life of our society. We have that ability. Each one of us can actually accomplish a great thing.